When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Why Do You Think You've Got No Friends? My name is Emily Lang. I'm an actress, writer, singer, codependent returnee from rock bottom and a gratefully recovering addict. And this is the podcast where we aim to rid the shame, the highs and lows and deadly blows that ultimately led us to the lessons that we never knew we needed to learn but are so grateful that we did. So, have you ever dreamed of something happening and then when it's actually happened, it's not all it's cracked up to be, or even worse, it's actually really, really hard and has a terrible effect on your mental health? Yep, me too. My guest today, comedian Lloyd Griffith, and I are discussing all this and more.
Okay, so it is 2017. What was happening? Lots of people died in 2016. Lots of celebrities died in 2016.
Did they?
I think that was the year of David Bowie.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Yeah.
The floral tributes in Brixton.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that means then that was Big Brother, yeah, wasn't it? David's dead.
Oh my God! David's dead. I told you not to make a scene. What's going on over there?
You can't tell anybody. Yeah. You can't tell anybody.
Was that 2016?
He's not dead. He's asleep.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't wait for someone to make a movie about that.
Well, it was David Guest, wasn't it?
Mm.
Who is now passed away.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, sorry to break that to you.
2016 was a bad year. 2017 was, I can't remember what was happening.
Where were you when Michael Jackson died?
I can't remember.
I was on top of the Empire State Building.
What?
I know. It was only last year. But I don't know. No, yeah. It was the moment I was on top of the Empire State Building.
What were you doing there?
Just taking in the sights. There's not much you can do there.
not throwing coins off the side.
Is that a thing?
Yeah.
Oh, shit, sorry. No, I went on my first proper holiday with my mum and my sister.
That's so lovely. First abroad
holiday. And we were in the lift and someone like muttered something. And this was the day before iPhones or anything. I think I had a Sony Ericsson,
yeah,
and a BlackBerry because I was a businessman at the time with, yes, a LinkedIn profile.
A businessman.
And with a job and a salary. I miss those days. And it was like, oh my God, Michael Jackson's died. We're like, what? And I'm trying to get signal on top of the Empire State Building with like a BlackBerry. He has. He really has. And then the security guards were asked to look for jumpers. And I was like,
what, because of Michael Jackson?
I genuinely thought, I was like looking at my
oh, fucking hilarious.
And genuinely, the security guards were told to look for jumpers. And I was like, oh my God. Me and Mum like,
you were like, no, no, this is a sweatshirt.
Yeah, I know. So I was so confused about a number of things. And then my mum was like, this isn't entirely how I envisioned. This is the top of the Empire State Building. Michael Jackson's there. I was like, well, I think we should stop visiting skyscrapers. And then, yeah, so mad. Sorry, I thought I'd mention that. No, I've never really talked about it.
That was a really good segue. 2017, I can't remember what was going on. All I know that it was 3 years before, you know, the shit really kicked off.
Yeah.
But shit, in another way, was really kicking off for you because you were doing a job.
Yeah.
Soccer AM.
Yeah.
We're allowed to say that. I've checked.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And in this moment, why do you think you've got no friends?
Well, I was... So I was hosting Soccer AM, and it was for me a dream job. I'd watched it as a kid, and I'd 2017 was like a nice year. I just supported Jack Whitehall on his arena tour, and I'd been on various TV shows as guests, and I kind of felt like in my career things were starting to happen. And I'd been going for a little while doing comedy, and then a bit of presenting and stuff, and then I got this job, and. I used to idolize this show, the people on the show. It was a dream to be a guest on it, and then they asked me to come and present it. And so I was like, oh my goodness.
And this was something that you'd watched when you were a kid.
Oh yeah, right? Like, I have to point out though, like, not legally, because we couldn't afford Sky as a child, as a family. So,
sorry, that's not funny, it's just about...
Yeah, laugh at poverty. All right, mate, well done. Why do you think you got no friends?
Cost of living.
It wasn't even... I mean, to be fair, we've grown up, we were always in a cost of living crisis. Okay, like, it was a thing.
I just love the fact that you managed to get Soccer AM.
Well, no, what happened was my teacher used to record it.
Yeah? What kind of teacher? Was it, let me guess, maths?
Yeah, absolutely. It was, yeah.
Fucking knew it.
Yeah.
They're the ones who you think are going to be like policemen, but actually have a heart of gold.
He's still knocking about now. I think we're friends on Facebook. Nice. So he's got his wife is married to a guy I used to play. No, his wife is married to a guy I used to play football, or the other way around. I can't remember. But so I knew of him. He was like a really cool guy. He used to come in. He used to bring in albums and like CDs.
Yeah.
He introduced me to, he used to bring like Blur albums. I remember him saying, if you ever go to university, tell girls that you like Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds.
What a fucking legend.
And I was like, I don't know who this person is.
But I'll fucking say it.
And then I remember once remembering it and going, some lady going, I really like Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. Like, oh my God, I've been listening to him since school. She's like, what's your favourite song? I was like, sorry, is it cool to have a favourite Nick Cave song? And she went, yeah, that's true, actually. And I was like, oh, I'm out of my depth. I'm
like the seat of your fucking
triple tap, I'm out.
Yield.
Yeah. So he was a really cool teacher. He was amazing. And he was just very, I remember he always used to wear these Clark's original shoes. He was just cool. He never preached. He was just like, look, this is maths. It's great if you can learn it because it'll help you in later life. It's great also if you can learn it because it'll help me with your grades. Let's just get on with it. And he used to record Soccer AM on a Saturday morning. And then whenever there was wet break at school, he'd wheel in the TV on the stand and we'd watch it. And there was obviously growing up in Grimsby, there was a lot of wet breaks. So we used to watch it and it was amazing. So for me, it was just a part, it was an institution. It was a part of like growing up as a football fan, especially like... In working class kind of like environments and towns and stuff. So everyone would talk about Soccer AM and like the campaigns that they did. Anyway, fast forward to 2017, I'd been a guest on the show. They'd asked me if I'd want to come on and co-host it, which again, unbelievable. And a few people had like warned me, I was just be careful about the abuse that you might get. I was like, mate, I'm an everyday guy.
Yeah.
I'm like a man of the people.
Yeah, you're not Jamie Lang.
Arguably, I'd say he's a man of the people. I genuinely, we'll talk about my love for him later on. But I was like, come on.
Are you joking?
Look at me. Yeah. Salt of the earth. And we'll talk about identity later on as well. But
so this is going, people were telling you, just be aware of, and it was coming from the fans. So be aware of
it was
coming from the
fans. It was people that already work in the industry.
Sure, okay.
Letting me know, I'll just let you know, mate, you're going to get a bit of stick. And I was like,
right.
All right, yeah,
they did.
Cool.
Did they give you like a reason as to why you might get a bit of stick?
I think, you're putting your head above the parapet.
Yeah.
You're hosting a football show, and I think football... is a quite a toxic environment. I think people use football now as a shield to kind of be argumentative, to be, it's kind of divisive. Mm-hmm. It's what religion used to be. Obviously, in some situations, football and religion is still very much hand in hand. But I think, we've seen politics have a bit of a renaissance recently where people take sides and be quite vitriolic and going, oh, do you know what? I'm far right, I'm far left. And then there's like, at the moment, there's no real centrists and stuff. So I think with football, it's people have got a side, they stick to it and they have an opinion. So I think that is why. And so, like, you know, people that had hosted the show before gave me a little heads up. And I was saying, oh, you know, you are susceptible to abuse. And this. I was like, mate, come on. I'm from Grimsby.
Come on, let me.
Do you know what I mean? And also as well, like, I'd done a lot, you know, I'd done stand-up for quite a while and I'd done a few TV shows and I'd never really got shit for it. I'd never really got abuse. Like, the odd bit here and there.
Yeah.
But you go, that's not a problem. That's fine.
Yeah.
And having just supported Jack as well, you know what I mean? You're going up and down the country. You're doing, you know, 10,000 people a night, and you're getting big laughs.
Mm.
So you're going, well, I'm popular. Like, you know, I'm only on for like 10, 15 minutes, but I'm popular and people like me. And therefore, yeah, that will translate to television. And I remember doing the first show. And at the time I was doing the Edinburgh Fringe Festival as well.
Right.
Like, and so I was doing it 6 days a week. And then on Friday night, I'd finish my show. Oh, no, Thursday night, sorry. I'd finished my show at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. I'd then fly to London, then do work on the show on Soccer AM all day Friday. So I had to, like, then not do the shows in Edinburgh on Fridays. And then I'd do the show on Saturday morning, Soccer AM, and then I'd fly back to Edinburgh and do my show in the evening. And I'd do that for, like, 4 weeks.
Wow.
And we did the first show, and I got to Heathrow Airport, and I opened my Twitter account and it was horrible. It was really, really horrible. And I remember being in, I can't remember where I was. I think for some reason I was in the lounge. And like that, I don't usually.
Someone's doing well.
Like, there was a reason why. It was the only time I was in a lounge. And I'm not sure whether I've just gone, I remember specifically that, because every time I now go to the lounge now.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, brilliant. Well, this is the worst place in the world because it just harks back to these memories. I remember, I think maybe, I don't know why. Like, I wasn't on a business flight because it's an hour flight, but I just remember being in the lounge for whatever reason. Maybe I can't remember. Look, that's by the by. But I just remember being there and I remember opening my phone and just feeling so sad because these tweets just were coming through.
Yeah.
And there were a lot. There was like a lot of love. But there was a lot of abuse.
Yeah.
And at that point, I was like, I felt the loneliest person in the world.
And like, it is, I mean, it's such a classic thing to say. And obviously, I'm not sparking anything new by saying it, but it is, even amidst, even if you'd got 10 lovely ones and 2 horrible ones, without question, going to focus on the negative comments. And so the love within that, just complete dissipates. It almost doesn't exist because we're so inclined to believe the negativity. Course, yeah. And when it's coming through in a stream like that, I'd like, that must, I've had like trolls come slide into my DMs, slide in.
Nice.
They ain't slide.
Look at you. They more kick the door down, don't they? And tell you you're a pig.
Yeah, yeah. Throw a grenade through the window.
Yeah.
kick the door. Yeah. But like I've never experienced that constant stream, and I imagine and you were on your own when that happened.
Yeah. So then,
fuck.
You know, it was, you know, weirdly I actually had my friends in Edinburgh that had come up for the weekend. They always come up to the Fringe when I'm up there, or when I used to be up there.
And you were doing your own like solo show.
I was doing my own solo show. Yeah. Which at the time was called Inundated. It was about having been dating a dating columnist. So already I was like an emotionally bit of a kind of, and I wasn't going deep into that. It was just more like the stupid things that had happened during that. And then, so already I was like invested in this show. And then I was like, oh my God. And you know, so I had no friends at that point. And I was just there being like, oh God, I've got to jump on a plane. I'm crying.
You got to jump on a plane and then go and do a stand-up show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, feeling like this.
Yeah. And so amazingly, like all my mates met me I got to Edinburgh and they all met me when I got to Edinburgh. And they'd obviously seen it and they're not
did they do the thing of going, oh wait, no, what comments?
Or no, they were like, fucking hell, mate. Come here.
That's so much better than being like, oh,
they won't. Oh. They keep me grounded. It's great, and they've all got normal jobs. They're all not, I wouldn't say, social media savvy.
Sure, okay.
You know what I mean? Like now, one of them's like the chair of his local kids' school PTA. Do you know what I mean? That's kind of what, you know. They're not.
Yeah.
You know, they're not TikTokers.
Yeah.
you know what I mean? They are.
Content creators.
They're not content creators. They are trying to create a small fund for people to go skiing in Val Thorens for a party of 30 very well brought up kids.
Without Stanley Cups.
Without what?
You know, those Stanley Cups that everyone has, all the TikTokers have.
I've got a new watch and it keeps ringing. I've got an Apple Watch for Christmas and I don't really know how it works. Also, told me I didn't sleep last night. I woke up at like 7.
Do you get
like
a little
7.
Thing being like calling? Like when you get a call, do you hear
no,
that?
No, I don't get that.
Oh, this is, I'm sorry to segue into a story here, but I heard something about Ian McKellen recently.
Oh, go on.
That he was doing a show in Windsor and he has a hearing aid in, but his hearing aid is connected to his phone.
Oh, no.
And so like halfway through the show, it'd be like, call from, call from agent.
Call from Patrick Stewart.
Call from Robert De Niro.
Yeah. Dame Judy Dench.
Which I just think is the funniest thing.
Well, I'm very sorry.
Excuse me.
That's sorry, that's the worst setting. Do you know what? I'd love him to be in my sitcom that I'm currently writing. And that was actually the producer of this sitcom that, I mean, by no means has it been commissioned. Mm-hmm. It's very much sat in trades at the moment. But I'd love for him to play. So if he listens or watches, sorry.
He never misses these things.
Oh, good luck.
So you were met off the plane.
Sorry, I was met off my plane by my lovely mates who genuinely are the most incredible group of lads that you could ask for.
Yeah.
They're fanboys, but not fanboys. They're just mates. And we're always there for each other. Anyway, so they were there and they were like, fucking hell, man. I was like, so what have I done? Nothing. Like, it was your first show. It was fine. But it was insane. So, so they were there and they were really supporting them. Like, mate, I was like, I don't know what to do. What the fuck, man?
Mm.
And it was just a really weird time where, you know, there were nice tweets and there were nice comments, but there was just this kind of trail of abuse. And you do look at those people and they're quite similar styles of people when you looked at their Twitter accounts and you're like going, oh, they're not very nice to anyone. But still, you know, and then there would be some people that was like quite nice to people and then would just be horrible to me. I was like, what are you on about?
Yeah.
So it was weird. And there was a chap called Max Rushton who used to host that show about 5 years before I was on it. And he came into the office the week after. He was like, Anna, mate, do you want to chat? I was like, yeah. And he was really good. He's like, mate, you just got to, he's like, it's the easiest thing to say. He's like, you've got to ignore it.
Yeah.
He's like, those people have got nothing to do on a Saturday morning than send abuse to someone.
Yeah.
You're living their dream. You're on that sofa. And he's like, you know, anyone thinks they can host a TV show. It's a lot harder than, you know, than it is and stuff. And so there was a few people that really kind of came to my aid there. Greg James, the radio host, he came up to Edinburgh to see one of his best mates, John Kearns, who I was living with at the time. And he was great, offered some amazing like words of wisdom. Having been there, you know what I mean? And that platform, obviously Radio 1 is, I'd say, arguably bigger than Soccer AM. And it's an institution where you are taking over from someone that had done a job and you can have stands for that person or just people that just don't want to hear you. And I remember seeing a few tweets that kind of like were horrible towards Craig James. I was like, what are you on about? He's a man. Just making people, trying to make people happy. And then I was like, oh, I'm in this situation now. And then I remember chatting to the footballer called Troy Deeney, who's done, who's quite well known now, the manager of Forest Green, but at the time he was at Watford. And I was doing a show with him and he was like, mate, he was really, like, really supportive. He was like, mate, well done on Soccer. He was like, I can't move. I've not seen you at the moment. I was like, oh, thanks very much. Are you enjoying it? I was like, yeah, I am. He was like,
yeah.
He was like, what's wrong? And I was like, oh, I'm getting a lot of shit online. And he was like, I've not seen that. I was like, really? He was like, yeah. Oh, yeah. I was like, yeah, who from? And I showed him. He was like, oh, I don't worry about that. And then he basically sat me down and was like, just go through their profile, realise that they're angry people.
Yeah.
and then just make peace with it.
Yeah.
He's like, don't do what I did. He's like, and turn up to someone's house.
Fuck off.
I was like, what?
I would pay good money to see that.
He went, yeah, basically, someone offered me out. He went, so I found out where they lived. He went, because they were, it was on, you know, and I basically just sent a photo. I'm like, hello, mate. Do you want to have a chat? And then his two best mates apparently were like, Troy, mate, turn around. Go home.
Turn around.
Yeah. So, yeah, and he, so, you know, these people that had dealt with it, you know, had kind of like come to my aid and helped me.
Yeah.
But
it's sorry to interrupt, that moment, like, it's when, and I've had it, and like I said, I've had it on a very small scale.
Yeah.
But the want to like reply and justify it, like, or like to tell them off and be like, how dare you say that is so great.
Yeah.
You want to, like, and so much that so many times I've like written a message being like, how dare you say this? And then actually, basically, it is, he's completely right about going, literally the only thing you can do is be like, I'm really sorry that you're so hurt that you have to respond like this.
I did respond to a few, but then I think you just kind of, it's that mindset, and, you know, having read various different books since, you know, things like, you know, Atomic Habits, things like that, where you get into a frame of mind by doing things. Like, if you get into a frame of mind by not doing those things, then you don't have to worry yourself about it. There's a footballer, a mate of mine, and he's a really lovely bloke called Martin Gritton. You wouldn't have really heard of him, but he was a footballer. He played for like 15 clubs. And he played for Grimsby Town, who I supported. He played for Torquay United as well. And also, growing up, Helen Chamberlain, whose job I took over at Soccer AM, she used to have his shirt on the wall. So he was a bit of an icon. He moved to Grimsby. We've since become friends. He now is retired. But he said to me, he was like, when people used to tweet me, like when Twitter first came out, he was like, they would tweet me being like, fucking shit today, bag of fucking cement. What's the point? Do you know what I mean? I've seen shit move quicker. Cement. As in, like, just don't move. Yeah. And then he was like, whenever I got that, I just replied with a little sad emoji. Going, I wasn't sad. He was like, but I just replied to that. So every time he said, every time he got something like that, he just replied with a sad emoji.
Amazing.
Like, and he's like, he doesn't care. Yeah. But then he's like, they might be like, oh God, I've made him sad.
Yeah. But that's what they do. And then they go, oh fuck, I'm sorry.
Yeah. But I just think, so there was a lot of good advice out there, which was great. And I actually bumped into Tim Lovejoy, who was one of the original hosts of Soccer AM, and was who I watched. You know, him and Helen were the two that like were the flagship hosts for 15 years. Mm. And I bumped into him in the gym, and it was quite an awkward moment. I was in a towel, he was in his pants.
Nice.
But there I was meeting, you know, a hero growing up. I was like, all right, mate. He's like, all right, mate, how you doing? I was like, yeah, good. Had a little chat. And then he's like, how was it? I was like, the abuse was something else. And he's like, yeah, mate. He's like, and I think he said something along the lines of, that's one of the reasons why he left. He's like, because, I didn't need that.
I mean, I guess like the biggest comfort in this, or what it seems to be, is that it is a really universal thing.
100%.
That it's not, and the fact that... that you were even like pre-warned.
Yeah.
People going, this will happen.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Even they go, ah, come on, you know.
It's yeah. Like, oh. It was, he said something really funny. He was like, look, he said, we didn't really have tweets when I was on.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, you'd have, we got emails. He's like, and then we got this bit where.
You got people phoning in.
Well, no, they didn't get people phoning in. He's like, he was like, once. Well, not once. He's like, he went, people would write in.
Fuck.
He's like, when someone hates you that much that they've paid 25 pence for a stamp and I put their own DNA on the back of an envelope to send it to you.
Yeah.
You went, that's when you know they really hate you.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God.
Because you know what? It takes effort to write a letter.
Yeah.
It takes effort.
I mean, it's very much like an Eminem song, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? that made me feel a little bit better.
Yeah.
And then he said that, we had this one week where on those old Sky remotes, they had this feature where you could text in by, you know, like through the actual skybox.
Yeah.
And yeah, we stopped that after 2 weeks. And I was like, oh, right. So it's always been a thing. I went, oh, always been a thing. Always
fucking
been a thing.
Hell.
And so yeah. But I have to say, not to get too deep, but this is why I wanted to come on and talk about this, 100%. It's massively affected me.
Of course.
For the last 5 years.
Yeah.
And I'm on this journey now to try and change my mindset because I am so defensive now.
Right.
I am so defensive. I've probably only had like three people come up to me in real life and tell me that I was shit on Soccer I Am. Mm-hmm. And one of which was quite recently, and I dealt with it very well. He's dead. No, he's not. He came up to me in a bar in Chester and just gave me both barrels, and I was very calm and like, that's interesting that you think that.
Yeah.
And I was like, almost kind of like became my therapist, went, should we talk about why you think that and why you think it's okay to tell me?
Fucking amazing.
And he's like, what are you on about? I was like, well, it's just weird that we don't know each other. Obviously, you know who I am. I don't know who you are. So already, you know, it's an unlevel playing field. But why do you think that you come over to tell me? Should we dig a little bit deeper? And he was a bit like, I don't know what's going on here. And then also I was like, I don't know what's going on here, but I'm happy to go down this road.
You really threw him off his rhythm there.
I'd had 6 pints at this point, so which never helps me. But I have since then been very defensive, and it's not a nice place to be in that I am always on the front foot. Mm-hmm. I'm always ready for someone to tell me I'm shit. Mm-hmm. I'm always ready for someone down the street to like give me a bit of grief.
And are you feeling like, and with that front footedness of going, you're ready for someone to come at you. Mm. What is your immediate response?
Oh, I have 4 stock responses ready.
Yeah.
And nice. It's really not healthy. And it's something that, you know, I'm trying to work around at the moment. Mm. So, you know, and it manifests itself in various different places. One of which is road rage. That's my dark place.
That's why I don't drive.
Oh, me and my ex-girlfriend. Like, she's like, I love you. But and at the start, she's like, it's quite sexy when you get angry, like in the car. I was like, thanks. And then after about 6 months, I actually hate it. It's disgusting. I was like, thank you very much. But it, you know, like whenever I walk past builders,
yeah,
you know, your archetypal kind of Soccer AM crew, I'm kind of waiting for them to be like, look at me, I fucking hear shit on it.
Yeah.
I'm like, mate, look at this. No calluses on my hands. Yeah. Okay, yeah. I've got lovely smooth hands. So how about fuck you?
Look at these. Piano hands, motherfucker.
Exactly. But annoyingly, I can't play the piano and I'm so angry about it.
Oh, God, shit.
If there's a builder that goes, mate, I've got grade 8 piano, I'd be like, oh, God, you've won. Checkmate. Shit. I've got a degree in music. I've got grade 8 in like 5 or 6 instruments. Like,
Have you actually?
Oh, yeah, I'm a classically trained singer. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, honestly, I'm incredible.
And I read your Wikipedia page.
Oh, yeah. It's only a small bit of it. And that's the maddest thing, is that's probably what I'm most talented at.
Classically trained singer?
Yeah. But I can't play the piano. But I can play, you know, like clarinet and saxophones. And
do you know what one of my favourite things? My eldest brother, who is now learning to play the piano, but for ages was just like, why the fuck? When he was a kid, he chose the oboe.
Oh, lovely. Oh, do you know what? Lovely instrument. Very hard.
Very hard. Very lovely instrument, but he was like, why the fuck did I choose the fucking oboe? And he was like, oh, I see people now who go, I'm just inspired, and as I sit down at the piano and go blah, blah, blah. And he was like, why does I have this image of me going, I'm so inspired, screwing on the thing, going out the little ring, going,
and then look like a snake charmer.
It is awful.
Also as well, like my mum was kind of went to this choir school in Grimsby.
Mm.
And again, this was like what I talked about, identity. Like I grew up in a very like working class town, very working class family, single parent family.
Mm.
me and my mum and my sister, and then I got this opportunity to go to this choir school down the road. And I had quite a good voice, is basically the crux of why I joined this choir.
Mm.
And so I did it, and then I looked like Harry Potter every day, like with a little hat, little cap.
Was it the wand that did it?
The what? Yeah. No. Well, do you know what? I didn't have a wand, I had a briefcase.
Oh, babe.
Yeah. And I still hark back to the smell of a new briefcase. Oh, my God. Unbelievable. And I used to walk down the road and, oi, briefcase wanker, oi, little posh prick. Do you know what I mean? And it was endearing. It was endearing because it was all my mates saying it, but I was like, oi.
Yeah.
And then, I went to this school. So I kind of like lived 2 lives for the majority of my life.
Yeah.
And so I kind of got a bit of abuse there.
Yeah.
From various people. And it was, you know, it was fine because I was a kid and stuff. So I've always, you know, been ready to deal with it. And then, it was just, then later on in life, when you think you know who you are.
Mm.
When I really don't, like, I'm a bit of a chameleon. So I remember, like, when I went to university, I went to Exeter, and I basically came back after like 3 months. I was like, hey guys, it's absolutely great to be back in Grimsby. Really having a lovely time in Exeter. And my teacher, Mr. Baker, went, where's that voice come from? And I was like, what voice? She's like, you don't sound like you're from Grimsby anymore.
Yeah.
I went, oh, God, that's what's going on. But basically, because when you sing, you're taught to basically sing without an accent.
Yeah.
So it's quite rare that you've got, like, I think that's why Russell Watson and Alfie Bow are so kind of good at what they do, is because they've kept their, I'm Alfie Bow.
Yeah,
and
shit in my hand.
And then he sings this beautiful aria. It's like, oh, wow. Who is this guy? Whereas most people, you know, don't have not northern voice, well, apart from Leslie Garrett. So maybe this theory is actually quite shit. So, but yeah, so I've always been a bit of a chameleon, like trying to figure out who I am and what have you.
It's when I feel like when there is a kind of identity crisis, especially if you've grown up in a way that adapting to your surrounding has kept you safe, and having to switch those up very quickly from like two different environments and go, and now I'm this person, I'm going to adapt to this place. It makes it very difficult getting older to remain as just one person all the time, because you're so used to adapting to your surroundings and who is around you. And it's really exhausting. It's really exhausting. And I do it all the time.
Yeah.
Growing up in an all-girls boarding school.
Where did you go?
I went to a place... Oh, fuck it. I went to a place called Heathfield.
No, I've not heard of it.
Never send your children there.
Yeah. Also, I went, yeah, I've never heard of it. So I'm going on Mastermind. And Lloyd, your specialty subject is all-girls boarding schools.
All-girls boarding school. That's good.
Wickham Abbey. Godolphin Latimer. It's actually quite weird that I've known two girls' schools there, but that's just from... I've got a type, okay? I've got a type, and they go to all girls' sporting schools, but I'm not... This isn't why I'm here.
It's fact. It was... It's like... I think when you're in an environment where you've got your age 11 and you've got 16-year-old girls running your life, it's just... Oh.
Yeah.
Growing up, like, literally going, I either need to be, like, invisible...
Yeah.
Or I need to adapt to this person.
Mean Girls.
Yes. But it's like, you really struggle with it. But, and also you don't really acknowledge it as a thing really until either someone calls it up, or like, it takes a long time to notice that you act as a chameleon.
Yeah. And it was not just in voice, but, you know, just in the, it was mainly in voice, actually. Mm. And just trying to figure out, like, who I am. And when I went to my 14th therapist, and they're the issue, it's not me. No, when I went to my second therapist, she was like, who is Lloyd? And I was like, what? I was like, well, here's my Wikipedia page.
Yeah.
She's like, no, who's Lloyd? Once the doors are closed and there's no one there, who's Lloyd? Mm-hmm. And then you're like,
what is left of the clown?
I'd rather not think about that, if that's okay.
Yeah.
But then it is just trying to figure out, you know, like who you are and who do you revert back to. And I remember her saying, she's like, do you know what I think you need to do? I think you need to stop, you know, dating. I think you need to, like, go on holiday on your own for like 2 or 3 weeks, or maybe just like take yourself away. And I was like, that makes me feel ill.
Yeah.
Doing that. And then the pandemic happened. I was like, oh, right.
Yep.
So did she start the pandemic?
Did she
fuck a bat in China? Because she loves me so much. I'm not sure that's how it started, and then I did spend a bit of time on my tard and realized it was not for me, thank you. I think it you know, it does, you, it's good to know who you are, so that when you need to go back to... Well, actually, I think I do know who I am roughly now. I'm not, you know, I'd say like 75% there.
It takes time. And when
you are
struggling with identity, when shit like that, when abuse like that is coming at you, it's... when people go, but just remember how great you are. Remember, it's all this. And you're like, I don't know if I'm great. This might be true.
Yeah.
This shit that's coming, maybe they're the ones who are seeing the real stuff. And this might be true because I don't fucking know. I've got no idea.
Yeah. And I think before I started doing comedy, I always like, that was Lloyd.
Mm.
And it's quite funny. A lot of people were saying, oh, you're funnier off stage. No. you're not as funny on a night out anymore. I'm like, oh, like, because I'm putting that funniness onto stage. Yeah, like, yeah, I'm getting paid for it. Like, it's, you know. And they're like, right. And but I did, I was like, all right. And that was my mates being, you know, saying that.
Yeah.
And then so you just kind of take a bit off stage and you give a bit of the honesty on the stage so that there's a bit of a mix, which sounds weird, actually. But I'm not entirely sure that's true. keep it in. But yeah, so I think for me, it was just feeling like, actually, no, that is who I am and that's who I want to be.
Yeah.
And but what I'm working on at the moment is just this kind of defense mechanism. Sure. And I think there's a difference between going into a room and wanting a fight. Mm-hmm. I think that's, you know, there are people out there that will just go into a room and just want to cause confrontation. Mm-hmm. I did a gig a few months back and there was a bloke who was on the lineup. It was like, it was a new act night and I was doing new material at the end. Mm-hmm. And oh my God, he was so confrontational. Like everything he said, like almost wanted to spark a fight. And right. I was like, oh mate, I can't deal with this. So I just thought, at least I'm not that guy.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
I go into a room and my defense mechanism is there. Like my hand's always ready to, you know, head for the holster and shoot back. So, but I'd rather not do that because I think actually what I'd rather do is just be in the moment and just imagine that everyone's lovely and, you know, no one's going to call me a boring prick that could send a glass eye to sleep.
Is that what?
Oh, that was the nicest thing. The stuff, honestly, this is the weirdest thing as well. And some of these things are awful, okay? Some of the tweets, and I screen grab them and I email them to myself. So they're in an email file somewhere. And I was like, I'll just keep them there for posterity if I ever need them for whatever reason for a show later on in life. And you know they're real because they're screen grabbed from like 2017 Twitter. So it's a very different
place.
Very different place, very different platform.
Thank you very much.
And the bird's still there.
Is it?
Oh, no, it's in on the screen grabs.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say.
one said, I'd rather go for a routine checkup with Harold Shipman than watch Lloyd Griffith on TV for the next 90 minutes. There was one, and this is awful, and his account, I did a deep dive on this guy to try and find out where he worked, just to kind of like go, hello, mate, this is what your employee is saying. And someone else did it for me.
Shit.
So, hello, mate, I've seen this tweet and just, it's not my, but I've basically.
Someone you didn't know did it?
Someone I didn't know, yeah. Like a vigilante, as it were.
Yeah.
He said, and this is awful, he said, I would rather send my children on holiday with the McCanns than watch this fat prick on Soccer AM for the next 90 minutes at Lloyd Griffith. And I was like,
oh my God.
Why is that in your head? Like, why is that a comparison? Like, I am a little tubby man from Grimsby speaking to footballers, trying to be funny.
Yeah.
Whether you found it funny or not, you know, who knows? But,
That seems like it's written for so many more people than it is just like specific.
Yeah.
It's just someone going, it's someone basically trying to make like a Ricky Gervais-esque joke and being as like shit as possible.
I just thought that's your first thought.
That's disgusting.
It's like there's deeper stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And again, going back to that bloke in Chester. Why have you written that?
Yeah.
Why have you brought your children into it?
Yeah.
And also, you know, I tried to write a joke about it when I talked about it a few years back and it just didn't feel right.
Mm.
One thing that did get me, and it was always men.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot remember a single tweet from a woman.
Mm.
It was always men.
Mm.
And it was always just viewers.
Right.
But there was one footballer that gave me shit.
There we go.
And I was just a bit gobsmacked being like, mate, you play for a League One team, okay? You're not the best footballer in the world. You're definitely not the worst.
Yeah.
But it is, I'd say, the definition in football terms is mediocrity. And you're having a go at me. And he basically said I needed a rude hullet, which basically rhyming slang for a bullet, as in it needs to be taken off the show. But I was like, still. And, I was like, that's a bit insane that, like he will never be invited onto the show.
Yeah.
Like, as in, because he's just not good enough. It would only ever be Premier League or above.
Yeah.
Occasionally Championship players. But this lad, very mediocre footballer.
Yeah.
Not the most beautiful bloke in the
world. How old is he?
Oh, like mid-30s. So like,
what? Yeah. Mate, you should know better by now.
I remember that and it really affected me that it was a footballer having to go at me being on a football show.
Mm.
And I just thought, that's really weird. It really kind of affected me.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I think sometimes people exist in a certain place and they cannot see beyond it. They cannot see the future beyond it. And creating that, like, there is absolutely no reason at all. And I think a lot of people do not understand that their tiny moment that they took, that tiny little moment, apart from the McCanns one, which I reckon he thought about for a good 5 hours before he did it. But that little moment that you've taken can literally can ruin, can destroy your day, week, month, year. And I think there are so few people who write those kind of things who actually understand that. And there is zero reason to like it to...
It's just baffling. Like, and obviously, like, you know, you do go, actually, I think you do need help.
Yeah, of course. And that,
but it's you that's having to deal with it in the moment and stuff.
And so you're the one having to be the bigger person, and you're the one having to... It's just like that thing of like, I talk about like overarm and underarm energy when someone is coming at you, like with all of this shit, and you're tossing it back underarm, going sad face.
It
gets very difficult for them to keep coming back. The energy it takes is a lot, I think this thing you talk about being like immediately defensive, just like being ready to pounce. Is that trauma response of going, you were put through all of that, and your amygdala is like, your animal brain is essentially going, I'm fucking ready. I'm like,
but I'd never been like that before.
No, but it's what happens when like, when you get attacked that much.
Yeah, and I think also as well, I think it's coupled with the fact that I started doing comedy in, say, like 2010. So I'd been doing stand-up for like 7 years when I got the job. And I think when you do stand-up, especially, I did a lot of comparing. You know, there's this, I think, and also comedy is like a weird art form. I trained as a classical singer. I'd spent my whole life from the age of 7 years old through to probably like 30 singing professionally and in various different churches, church choirs, cathedral choirs, in chamber choirs as a soloist. And so you would never get abuse. It was always just recognition.
Yeah, can you imagine if someone was heckling from the back of St. Paul's?
Yeah. But there was a bloke that heckled at the Royal Opera House about 6 months ago. And it was like a 12-year-old kid who is an unbelievable singer.
Right.
And he heckled him. He's like, what's going on? Just the idea of that is just so baffling. But yeah, so I'd never had to deal with it kind of like that level of kind of like two wayness. It was always like, I've just performed an aria and here's the applause.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We've just come to the end of The Messiah and here's the applause. Whereas with comedy, you know, you could do a joke and obviously it is a bit two-way, call and response in some elements of it. And when you're comparing, you do need to be on your toes and kind of like ready for heckling, which I think is just it's mad. Sometimes it makes it.
Yeah.
And I love to be interactive with my crowd, but I'm never horrible and rude and I never mean to be. And if I ever am, then, you know, I always try to apologize and be like, look, you know, I'm sorry. But it's usually funny.
Yeah.
And I, with my style of comedy, I'm always the butt of the joke. I'm always a little fat idiot. Do you know what I mean? I'm the jester and the clown. I always punch up. I never punch down. And so, you have to learn to just be ready for if someone calls, you know, especially being like, you know, not the most beautiful bloke in the world. I'm not even the most beautiful bloke in my family. It's just me, my mum, and my sister. I think it's true. And so you're just there as a tubby guy, you know what I mean, that doesn't look like Brett Goldstein on stage. So you've got to be ready for someone, boring fat prick, you know what I mean? And again, it's comedy. You have to be ready for it. It's part and parcel of it.
And people kind of expect it. It's like, because heckling is such a part of comedy. And then
it is, yeah.
That,
yeah.
That like being ready for it, being ready to be so sharp. And then if you don't respond quickly, then it's just like, it's fucking terrifying.
And also I think there's like, as well, with comedy, it's really interesting. You know, there's all this talk about safe spaces, you know, comedy where there's no heckling and you can wear badges if you want to be spoken to. That's fine. Yeah. I'm not bothered about that. It's not a gig that I want to go to or perform at.
Yeah.
But also I think, you know, I go to a lot of shows, stand-up tour shows, and you just go there and do what, you know, it's a performance. And you're happy at the end of it. And there's been a bit of call and response between the two, you know, the two people. Like, I think the person that does it so beautifully is like Tim Key.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Like his comedy is absolutely perfect. Yeah. He does poetry.
I love his poems so much.
And his interaction with the crowd is arguably one of the best out there. It's never vitriolic. It's always, you know, he's playing this character and you know he's the butler joke and I think people enjoy being involved in it. He's never nasty to them. You know, people like Rob Beckett are absolutely brilliant at it. Do you know what I mean? Being able to chat to the crowd and just doing it in such an endearing way. You know, but if someone says something a bit catty, you know, he deals with it perfectly and beautifully, and it's always done in a funny way. But there are nights where people just want to heckle and go absolutely mad and mental.
We've been fortunate enough to have some amazing comedians on the show. And I've always
And
Tom Lucy. And Tom Lucy twice for some reason.
Oh, come on, Tom. Get a job. Fuck.
I was going to ask you in a picture of Tom recently.
Yeah, he was more in a picture of me. He weren't even on that night. He turned up to Wembley, had a one photo and then fucked off.
Josh Berry's impression of Tom Lucy is one of my favourite things in the world.
What is it?
Oh, fucking hell.
Yeah.
Oh, I want to talk about my fit mum.
My fit mum. All right, Mr. Henderson. I've just given away one of his punchlines. I'm so sorry, Tom.
We love
you,
Tom.
Yeah, no, I love Tom. He's great. And it's been fun watching Tom grow, literally.
Yeah.
And also the other word, metaphorically. But also, yeah. As a kid, and you know, also I'm sure he talks about identity as well. Do you
know
what
I mean?
The
does,
way in which he's
so.
Kind of like, you know, gone from, you know, the way you are on stage and stuff, and the way I am on stage. I was really dark when I first started. I was really dark, and I used to come on wearing a pink Airtex top, a polo top, a purple cardigan. What? Some blue.
Was it buttoned all the way to the top?
All the way to the top. Do you know what I mean? Blue jeans, and then some multicolored Asics Onitsuka Tigers.
Sick.
But then I used to do really like dark, not dark comedy, but I tried to be like Jack D or like Sean Locke, where I like very like, and one of my mates like, who the fuck are you? Where's the funny bloke from the pub? You want to see him? I was like, oh, okay, cool. And then that's when, yeah, it kind of, I started to really enjoy doing it. And then because I was enjoying it, the crowds were enjoying it.
Yeah.
Like, all right. But yeah, some of my first stuff was absolutely abysmal. So
I honestly think, I've said it so many times, here we get Mickey's joined the chat, everybody.
Hi, Mickey.
Come on, Michael.
Looks very much like our old family cat, Betsy. But Betsy had a few more white patches.
He's fucking enormous at the moment. I can't tell it's because he's been eating a lot, or because he's just really hairy.
Very hairy. Have you got one of those brushes?
Oh, the ones I've seen on Instagram.
Oh, God, yeah. I just buy one of them just in the hope that I might get a cat.
You just might sort of see a cat around the place.
Hey, come here. Lloyd, your hands are bitten to death. Yeah, I just keep petting strangers' cats.
I keep trying to brush them with this thing I saw on Instagram. There
you go.
Mickey. Hi, Mix. Hi, Pickle.
Yeah, you rub your coat against me Burberry bag. Oh, no, it's Mulberry. Sorry, not Burberry. Just a normal working class lad.
So, I mean, with this thing about being immediately defensive, this is something that you're sort of working on now.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's, you know, I going back to that, I saw Brendan Hunt, who plays Coach Beard in Ted Lasso. He did a tweet.
So, and, I fucking love Ted Lasso.
He did a tweet basically saying, it was an Instagram post, but basically the crux of it was like, you don't want to be that guy that walks into a room looking for a fight. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I don't want to be that guy that's like ready to defend myself. Mm. And so I did a bit of looking around about whether, you know, that's a normal thing, and, you know, spoke to Latin therapists and stuff. And, you know, it's a defense mechanism. So there's ways in which to kind of counteract that. And it's just by...
I think it's like a lot of it. I talk about the pause quite a lot.
Yeah.
And the pause is such a difficult thing to take. Yeah. But going, basically just giving your cortex enough time to catch up with your amygdala and go, I'm not going to respond from this, like, animal primal brain, which wants to go either fight, flight, freeze, appease. But the cortex, which goes, hang on a second, you're safe in this environment. Yeah. Like, this isn't life and death. This isn't, just give it a second and respond in a way that you're actually going to be happy with. But it's really difficult to do.
Yeah. And it takes time.
Oh yeah. 100%.
You know, to be able to then count to five or whatever it is you might be counting to, to go, you know, and visualize yourself being in that
and
place.
And it feels wrong. It feels wrong to do it, because when your amygdala is literally going, this is, I'm trying to protect you. There, off he goes. Goodbye. And so it to take the pause feels like you're putting yourself in danger.
Yeah.
And it's a really frightening thing to do.
Yeah, of course,
it's really, really scary. And even acknowledging it as like something that you need to do takes time and work. And it's only like, you know, comes with the awareness that you actually begin to do it. But it's fucking tough.
Yeah, it's tough, and it's annoying that you have to do it.
Yeah, it's
because
really
of and you know, there might be a deeper reason, but you know, for me it's because I'm having to deal with what I had to deal with for 2 years.
Mm.
And so you're going, oh, it's annoying that I've got to deal with that because I didn't have to deal with it before, but I'm having to. And again, as you say, you're putting yourself in quite a vulnerable place for 5 seconds as you have that little reset.
Yeah.
It's almost like, this is probably the worst analogy that anyone's ever said, like when Clark Kent goes to the telephone box to kind of like change.
Yeah.
You go, I need to deal with this.
Yeah.
And then you like run to the telephone box and it's like that, you know, and like, obviously he just spins around and gets changed, but realistically, you know, you're taking your clothes off.
Yeah.
And you're having to put like, you know, where do his clothes ever go?
Oh, I don't know.
So yeah, it is that kind of like I think I've just likened myself to Superman there.
No, but that's good though.
Yeah.
And also like in that 5 seconds, someone could come in and reveal your identity, your true identity.
Well, that's exactly, but
fucked.
But that, I think that's kind of what I was getting at, is that, you know, you're going, oh God.
Yeah.
Oh God, I'm naked. Oh. Seeing me naked. So but yeah, it's something that, you know, you have to deal with. And I think, you know, life comes at you, and as you grow older, your brain develops. And you know, I developed you know, this level of kind of like anxiety because of this, and you just have to deal with it. And it's not great, but there are tools out there that can help you and stuff. And I'm still really fortunate in that, you know, I have an amazing family. I have incredible friends. I have a really lovely job. I've got an amazing support network. And you've just got to remember that sometimes.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you think back to those tweets and go, I hope they have as well.
Yeah.
I hope they have, and I hope the tweets, you know, subside in their feelings. And look, I'm all for banter, for, you know, for a bit of persiflage, for a bit of, you know, mockery and stuff. But I think when it gets vile, it's like, okay, there's no need to. And look, you know, in friendship groups, we'd have pushed the boundaries, but it's because you know each other. You know exactly
it's
where
safe.
You can.
It's a safe environment.
Yeah. And I just think that, you know, now there are a lot of books, a lot of resources, people to speak to. And obviously, if you're fortunate enough to be able to pay for therapy, you know, that's great and stuff. But I think, you know, there's ways in which you can help yourself. And I'm very fortunate that I've kind of identified this. Still on a, you know, a long road to try and get rid of this. And it'd be nice, you know, in the next 5 years to be able to go, oh, I'm not going into a room with, you know, mental nunchucks and ready to unleash hell on, you know, a plumber who might have thought that sketch that I did in 2018 was a bit shit.
Yeah.
So I just go, I'll just get over it. And hopefully people will just forget about me in it. So, and also, to be fair, like, annoyingly, like, I sell, I'm going on tour in March, April, May. And I do well. I do really, really well. I'm so grateful for people that buy tickets. And people go, oh, Matt, I loved you on Instagram. I loved you. Oh, yeah, Matt, I still think about this sketch again. Oh, fuck. You know, but it's like that thing that you said at the start. Yeah, you can look at the positives, but you'll look at the negatives. And the perfect example of this, I'm going to stop ranting in a second. Right. But Alan Davies, who a very funny comedian, like one of my, you know, that kind of like idols growing up. Jonathan Creek, to the OGs.
I remember.
He was talking on a podcast and he said he remembered doing a gig and there's like probably about 1,500, 2,000 people in this theatre and everyone was having a whale of a time. There was this lady on the third row and next to her was a man and this man was hating it.
Mm.
And he was like, I could have absolutely just embraced all the laughter from all these people.
Mm.
But the only person that I was concentrating on was this guy in the third row.
Mm.
And he's like, what I basically built a mechanism is that I have to look at that person and decide as to why they're not laughing, make a decision, and then I can crack on. So in that moment, I looked around, everyone was loving it. I saw a lady on the third row and next to her was a bloke who wasn't laughing. And I was like, right, I think they're a couple. Yeah. I think she loves me. She's wanting to come and see me. He doesn't want to be here and he's letting himself be known. But that's fine because that's her husband.
Yeah.
And she loves me more than she loves him. So I'm happy to just crack on.
Yeah.
It was words of those effects. I'm paraphrasing. I think it was the Comedian's Comedian podcast that he said this on. But I think about that.
It's so difficult to believe it. But like that thing of understanding that whatever was going on for that guy was so much more about him
than it
was about anything that was happening. Like, it's really, really difficult to him. When people are cruel, you go, there's a thing in recovery called the sick man's prayer. Basically going, whenever it's just like fucking horrible, you're like, God, I'm so sorry.
I'm so
sorry that you're having such a shit time. So you have to behave like this. Because essentially only hurt people.
Yeah.
It's so difficult to have that empathy when someone is being, fuck's sake, Michael, when you feel like you're being attacked.
Yeah.
At this point in the podcast, we like to ask, we've talked about a lot of things.
Yeah.
What are the things about you as a person that you really love and cherish and are very grateful for?
I think the way in which I was brought up,
we're
like unbelievably grateful and wouldn't change a thing. So small family, just me and my mum and sister, but with a really supportive network of three aunties, an uncle, a number of cousins. And we just had an amazing time. You know, we weren't rich by any stretch of the imagination. We used to go to Hull for holidays.
Back, yeah.
Bridlington, Skegness. You know, we had a great time. And we just made fun where we made fun. And we always had humour. We always had humour. And my aunties and my mum are some of the funniest people I know. And so I'm just grateful for that upbringing. And, you know, hopefully when I bring a family into this world, want to do the same thing of just going, look, just embrace it. Like, he's trying to like edit.
Oh, he does this.
He's trying to get onto the laptop.
He'll get his little litter covered paws on that keyboard.
Oh, then he's like, well, you won't let me edit? Right, I'm off. Fuming. Have you interviewed Mickey yet?
I mean, he joins the chat every single time and Robson's like arse against the microphone. So basically, yeah.
But yeah, so I just think that just making of the making the moment, and that's what we did. We always lived in the moment. We didn't worry too much about what would happen in the future or what would happen in the past. It was just very much like enjoying the moment. And there might have been things going on that I wasn't aware of, but me and my sister were never kind of, you know, made aware of those things. And my mum, incredible mom, and she always just said, do what makes you happy. So she worked her tits off she had like two or three jobs at a time, you know, to basically ensure that me and my sister had whatever we needed.
Yeah.
And she knew that the singing thing was going to be a big thing for me. And so it was like, look, just do what you want to do.
Amazing.
Knowing that if I went off to be a professional singer, I probably wouldn't earn a huge amount of money. Like, even if you're one of the best singers, you know, in the country,
yeah,
you know, the money's not anywhere near what you think it would be, which I think is a travesty, you know, especially in the choral world and opera world. You know,
of course, because it requires a level of skill. And like,
it's unbelievable.
I went to Guildhall, School of Music and Drama.
Lovely.
Lovely place. And when I bumped into some people, I left in 2014.
Yeah.
In the acting course, I bumped into some people at the pub who, and that like 7 years later, who I'd been at Guildhall with, and they were on the opera course and they were still there.
Yeah, yeah.
Still fucking training.
Yeah.
It's like a skill unlike.
Well, yeah. It's your voice needs to mature.
Yeah.
And as you say, you know, it's a level of skill that I think is just unrivaled.
Yeah, it really is.
But the money's unbelievably poor.
What is your favourite piece of music to sing? That's a little segue.
One of my favourite pieces of music to sing, a choral piece by Alonso Lobo called Versa Est in Luctum. Mm. I'd say second to that would probably be Thomas Tallis's Speminalium.
Oh, yeah.
And then some of the more cheesy stuff. William Harris, Bring Us, O Lord God. Mm-hmm. Proper, like, choral. My Spotify Wrapped is an absolute shit show. It's like 15th century, 16th century Latin polyphony, and then George Benson, Give Me the Night. It's really weird. And then Blossom's Girlfriend. So it's a real smorgasbord. So, but yeah, my mum was always supportive. She's like, look, I don't care what you're doing. I don't care how much money you earn. Just I want you to be happy. And so that's kind of always what I've just remembered. And my sister's got a brilliant job down here. She did what she wanted to do. Mm. And, you know, we've always been happy and stuff. So, I can't remember what the question was.
Just what are you grateful for about yourself?
Oh, yeah.
Are you thinking good things?
Yeah, and I think I've just believed that. Yeah. You know what I mean? I've always just kept that. I'm just an amazing comedian I've mentioned before, John Kearns. Mm. He said to me, I remember he said, he comes to see a preview of me do some stuff. And afterwards he went, great show. You happy? I went, what? He went, you happy? I went, what do you mean? He went, you're doing the hour. You're always happy. Anything that don't make you happy? I went, oh, well, there is this one routine. And he went, is it the so-and-so routine? I went, yeah. He went, yeah, I can tell you're not happy, mate. Why are you doing it? Get rid of it. Be happy. I was like, okay. He went, let the other stuff breathe. I was like, okay, cool. And so I've kind of adopted that in life, just always doing stuff that will make me be happy. And obviously, you know, I'm fortunate enough that I found a job that I'm doing. You know, it's very easy saying, oh, I'm a comedian, you know, and if you're like a delivery driver, going, well, I'm not happy doing this.
Yeah.
You know, it's trying to find a delivery job that will make you happy. Like, I'm not, by no means am I a life coach, but it's just trying to find things in life that do make you happy. I mean, I've got friends that just love going to CrossFit. Up in Grimsby. Yeah. You know what I mean? I've got friends that my cousin loves mountain biking. He's like, that makes me happy. And he's like, and it means that I can go to work and I love doing my job. Mm. I found a job that I like doing. You know, I'm not like in the morning, oh my God, I want to go and I can't wait to go to work and, you know, do this. He's like, but I love doing it because it means that it provides for my family, but then also it means I can go mountain biking for 5 hours a week and you know, pay for this great bike and all that lot. So I think it's just if you can, where you can, just always make sure that you're happy doing what you're doing, whether that is in your job or extracurricular.
Or extracurricular.
Yeah.
In your job or extracurricular.
Yeah.
I like it. And we have another portion of the podcast we like to call thank you letters.
Yeah.
We ask you to express gratitude for a person, a place, or a thing, or one of all three, but somewhere, someone, something for which you are grateful.
Yeah. So I'd say it's my godfather, Jeff. God rest his soul. He's dead. Mm. He passed away 2008. Mm. And he was an amazing bloke. He was me auntie's mate. They used to play squash together. And he kind of came onto the scene and was just an incredible person. Mm. When I say wealthy, he was wealthy for Grimsby.
Right.
As in that he had probably an all right disposable income. By no means was there millions in the account. You know what I mean? He just worked well and had a mad career. And he just kind of taught me about, he basically was very extracurricular. He was like, look, go and do the things at school. He was like, but it's always good to do stuff outside of it, whatever you can do. And again, really fortunate. And, you know, we just did some mad things. So he used to take me to Sheffield every now and then to do dry slope skiing.
Fun. I used to do that in Bracknell.
Yeah. Was it good?
No, it was shy.
Was it on a hill?
It wasn't a hill.
Yeah, I mean, it can only be on a hill. Otherwise, you're not skiing. You're standing. So he used to take me to Sheffield every now and then. I've never been skiing on snow.
Yeah.
Like, I've never skied on snow. And I was weirdly talking to your brother about that.
About never skiing on snow?
Well, we were talking about skiing.
He loves skiing on snow.
And he was like going, so I remember like being, you know, in Val de Lobo. I was like, oh my God, ski season. He's like, hey, Val de Lobo is not a ski place.
Yeah,
I was like,
Val de Lobo is Portugal.
I was like, oh, shit. I was like, I've never skied on snow, mate. He's like, you don't need to ski on snow to know that Val de Lobo. I was like, oh, okay, cool.
Jamie, nice, like, shut the fuck up.
So, I've never skied on snow. But he used to take me to Sheffield, and he did some stuff for a mate, and as a return favour, this guy who was a plane instructor.
A plane instructor?
Oh, what are they called? Like,
pilot?
Pilot. Oh, fuck. You got it.
Yeah.
He taught people how to fly. Flight instructor.
Flight instructor.
Yeah, bloody hell. he was like, Johnson free flying lessons. He was like, well, actually, can you give them to me, godson?
Oh, that's a fudge.
So then, yeah, so I had like 3 or 4 flying lessons and stuff like that.
That's
and then
incredible.
He'd just like teach, like he'd like give me extra homework, which was weird.
Hmm.
But it helped, you know what I mean? And
yeah.
He was just always very supportive. What I will say is, though, he was always like, look, Lloyd, you're never going to earn money being a singer, being a fool. He's like, get a proper job. And I was like, I'm going to prove you wrong. And I did. And sadly, he passed away before I could, like, not prove him wrong, but go, hey, look, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm grateful for him for a number of things. He kind of like just was very worldly and just taught me a lot of stuff outside of school. Oh, fuck, mate, we go to Little Chef. And he'd be like, right.
I remember Little Chef.
Oh, my God. We'd go to this Little Chef and he'd be like, right. This Little Chef is 6 miles away from Grimsby. How many beans would it take if the average bean is... I was like, mate, come on, man.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to enjoy my Olympic breakfast. That was actually a good recall of memory, that Olympic breakfast, because that's what they have there.
Is that what it was?
Almost certain.
I don't remember. I only remember having baked beans in Little Chef. I can't remember what
else he did. But yeah, so he was just great. And he was really, really supportive. He used to drive me from choir every day. He used to drive me on a Sunday morning to choir. My mum couldn't drive. So I'm just really grateful for him because he enabled me to go to that school at the start. Because whilst they would offer me a place, it was still a lot of money. And so he paid for me for the first kind of like 7 years.
Fuck, that's really that's fucking beautiful.
Yeah. So I wouldn't be where I am because of a number of people, obviously my family, but also because of Jeff and, you know, a few people on the side, you know. And then he basically had a bit of an episode like 7 years in, was like, I can't pay for you anymore. Whether he lost money, he'd just been off a bit of an odd one. And then the school stepped in like, look, you know, let's keep Lloyd here and stuff. So, but yeah, so I'm very grateful to him for those years that enabled me to do what I'm doing. And it's almost like, you know, the fact that he's like, get a proper job. I was like, do you know what, mate? I'm going to take your money and I'm going to be a clown. Okay? And that's
look at me now.
Yeah. Look at me now, Jeff. So, but yeah, bless you. We had the same birthday as well.
Which is?
27th of October.
There we go. I'll keep that in mind for
when you're doing your guest cards. Lovely.
Those hand-painted cards I do every year. So you're going on tour?
I am, yeah. I'm going on tour in March, April and May. And I think actually, this isn't an exclusive, but I think we're adding extra dates because, it's selling all right. And people keep saying, why aren't you coming to Belfast?
Yeah.
And they usually say in a Belfast accent, but I just cannot risk that.
Why are you coming to Belfast?
Hey, wait, what's your problem? Why are you not coming to Belfast now? So exclusive, I'm going to Belfast. Well, actually, I don't know if we are. We're trying to sort out a venue.
Okay.
But yeah, so I'm going up and down the country. It's a tour called Baroque and Roll. And I wanted to call it Renaissance. But my agent was like, yeah, so Beyonce's just done a tour called Renaissance. And we think that your tour might just get lost in the noise. I was like, okay, cool. And the reason why I wanted to call it Renaissance is my favourite period of music and I guess art.
Uh-huh.
And it's basically Renaissance means rebirth.
Yeah.
And so this kind of year, I'm having a bit of a rebirth.
Love it.
In that, like, I'm trying to get fit. I'm trying to get healthy. I turned 40 last year. I'm having a hair transplant.
As did my brother, Jamie Lang. He's spoken about that openly, so it's fine.
I'm fully aware of that.
Oh, yeah.
I've tapped him up on his context. I
think we all know.
And I'm getting laser hair removal.
Yeah.
On parts of my body that I've always been a bit self-conscious about.
Very cool.
I'm having I'm having my teeth done. I'm just having a few things done to them.
Sure.
When I bite into an apple, there's a couple of things I go, ah, that's a bit off, isn't it?
I'm not one to talk about teeth, though.
It's just at the point now where I'm going, well, Oh, yeah. Little crack.
Yeah.
Well, I've got a missing tooth from when I got into a fight with a Cadbury's Crunchy. Never put them in the fridge.
Did he send you a bad tweet?
He sent me a bad tweet. I was like, right, I'm going to come round to Bourneville. That is a very good reference point because Bourneville is actually where the Cadbury's factory is.
There we go.
And there will be people watching or listening and be like, well done, Lloyd. but just no one in this room. Okay. And so, yeah, so I'm doing all these things, you know. Great. What else am I doing? So say like, yeah, kind of getting fit, eyes, just going to get my eyes done. Mm-hmm. Just so I'm like, look, you know, get to a point in your life going, I've had a really nice time.
Mm.
But actually there's a few things cosmetically and mentally that would make me happier going into the next bit. I've got one of my best mates. She's basically said, you know, I had a dream about it last night. Oh my God, this just broke my dream.
Go on.
She basically said, look, I've had two kids. I've always enjoyed my boobs, but they've been ravaged for the last kind of like 7 years. Mm. So I'm having a boob job.
Hell yeah.
She was like, because I want to look in the mirror every morning and feel happy. At the moment, I look at them, I'm like, oh. And she's like, so I've been saving up and I'm having a boob job. And I'm like, great.
Yeah.
If it makes you happy, I've always had hair on my head and it's going. And I'm like, I'd still like to have hair.
Yeah.
Very much my personality. So I've been saving up and I'm going to a clinic to get it done and stuff. So I think it's just like, you know, it's just all about things that you can do to help yourself. Obviously not everyone, you know, can do certain things they want to do and stuff. But yeah, I just want to talk about that. And also like the main thing, it's funny. So it's just me taking the piss out of myself for essentially being the only bloke that goes to my laser hair removal clinic. I turn up and they literally like, you're right. I was like, oh yeah. And they're like, oh yeah, the fire alarm's around there. I'm not to fix the fire alarms. I've got hairy shoulders.
Yeah, there's a water gun at work.
Yeah, honestly, they're looking at me going, how can I help? I'm like, oh, I've got an appointment. What for? My bum. No, I'm keeping my bum as is.
Yeah, good.
I've got a lovely bum. So yeah, so it's just, yeah, so the show's about that. And yeah, it's selling quite nicely. So we're going to add some more dates and stuff. So, but I'm up and down the country.
Amazing.
So yeah, if you fancy a bit of fun. Oh, and I sing in it as well.
Oh.
Yeah. So yeah, just been writing the songs this week.
Are you writing them as well?
Well, I write them with a couple of people.
Okay.
So,
the clarinet making an appearance?
Oh, fuck. Do you know what?
I think that's a good idea.
The saxophone might.
Oi.
Yeah. I might bring out the saxophone. That's a good idea. I might write that down when I leave here.
Oi. Oh, I love him.
I'll send you an invoice. Send me an invoice.
Thank you so much for coming on. I will link everything down below. So please click the links in the bio and you will find tickets and go see Lloyd on tour because apparently it's pretty fucking funny.
Well, who knows because it's not been written yet.
Well, I've heard.
It has been written.
From my friends.
If you're in Sheffield the other night, you'll know it's funny.
Thank you so much. This has been such a pleasure. And yeah, we're just really, thank you for being so open about everything. Thank you for talking about things that people don't often talk about, such as laser hair removal.
Yeah, yeah.
Get it done. Really appreciate it.
You can play on ClearPay. Klarna. Klarna your shoulders clean.
Let's leave it on that. That's really good.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.